Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all related to the, let's all say it together, first in the nation New Hampshire primary. People actually going to the polls in New Hampshire after showing up at many, many town halls and having the candidates pretty much live in their states, or at least some of them over the past few months. And we'll talk about that aspect a little bit later in our podcast. But let's start with good news. And we've talked about this before, but this seems to be getting more serious. So the more serious this gets, the better news it becomes. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg acknowledged for the first time that he was weighing a 2016 presidential bid 2 weeks after an advisor said that he was exploring the possibility. Bloomberg said he was looking at all the options regarding a potential bid for president as an independent candidate. He called the current presidential campaign, quote, distressingly banal and an outrage and an insult to the voters. He said he would have to start putting his name on state ballots as soon as March. And that was the timetable the advisor gave a little while ago, too. So, Jim, if Michael Bloomberg is serious about this and he actually does mount an independent bid, as we said before, it can only be good for the Republican nominee.
That is correct, Greg. Now, one thing I should note, is Mike Bloomberg the only person in America who finds this campaign banal? Right? We have our gripes with it. This is a campaign that's not going the way. Ain't boring. Donald Trump is not a banal speaker. And I'm sure he's got some names he'd like to call you if you say that he is, based on what he said last night.
Yes.
So yes, if Mike Bloomberg jumps in, there are occasional folks, Democrats, who say, oh, he'll take more from the Republicans because he was a Republican. These are people who've not paid any attention to anything Mike Bloomberg ever did. Yes, he supported one or two school choice initiatives. He's considered friendly to the business community, although that doesn't always add up to a great economy. But ultimately, he was the ultimate face of the nanny state, you know, Mr. Ban the Big Slurpees. And he's the face of gun control in this country. He's probably spent more and done more to promote that charge. And that's not how you take away votes from Republicans, by standing for the nanny state and gun control. Now, I got to say, I think it was the Atlantic went through and they counted all the different times there's been a talk of, ooh, Mike Bloomberg might run for president. And I think it came up with 25 times since 2006. There's been talk about this. So, Greg, there's a part of me that thinks it's not actually going to happen. It is a lot more fun to be former mayor and potential presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg than to be just former mayor Mike Bloomberg. And my suspicion is that he's going to look at this and say, look, he could spend a bazillion dollars. Now, I understand Mike Murphy might be looking for work soon. So, you know, he might all of a sudden jump on. I did a lot of great ads for Jeb Bush. Just wait till I get millions of dollars of your money, Mr. Mayor. My suspicion is that Bloomberg's going to look at this and realize that even, you know, he can make the ballots. It's not really that hard. The real question is, can you get to 270 electoral votes? And look, you know, Ross Perot got 19% of the vote in 1992, and he got zero electoral votes. There are not a lot of states where you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, that's a Bloomberg state right there. And so my suspicion is he will probably lean against it, unless it looks like it's going to be Trump and Sanders or something like that, some really unexpected set of circumstances. And in that case, maybe he'll jump in, which would be good news for the Republicans. But I don't know. Greg, I don't know about you, but if you give me the choice of Sanders, Trump, and Mike Bloomberg, can I get one guy who likes guns, right, please? I guess by that standard, Sanders would be the pro-gun guy.
The one thing we desperately need in this race is an old, white, northeastern liberal. We just don't have enough of those in this race.
Yeah, and a billionaire to boot, you know. Theoretically, somebody pointed out, if it came down to Sanders, Trump, and Bloomberg, the campaign would come down to a guy from Brooklyn, a guy from Queens, and a guy from Manhattan. Three of the five boroughs.
Oh, man.
We need a Republican president from Staten Island.
Staten Island always gets the shaft, or the Bronx, but they got the Yankees. So anyway, all right, on to
Jeter.
Derek Jeter. That's right. He's got free time. All right, on to the bad martini now. And Jeb Bush seems to have a little more fire in the belly. He hasn't been quite as low energy the last few days. Most people think he did pretty well in the debate. A lot of people thought he got the better hand of Trump on the eminent domain dust-up. But then one of the things that really bothers people about Jeb Bush is when he suddenly does things like this. About 6 to 8 months ago, when the first real fundraising numbers came in from this campaign, everyone said, oh, Jeb is in the driver's seat of this campaign. He's raking in way more money than anybody else, especially with that Right to Rise super PAC, totaling $117.6 million last year. that Right to Rise reported to the FEC. Well, obviously, the Super PAC has unleashed a ton of ads against Marco Rubio and some other people, and it really hasn't mattered much. And a lot of people think the Super PAC, led by Mike Murphy, as you mentioned, has been a dud. So oddly, Jeb Bush telling Dana Bash over at CNN on Monday that he hates Super PACs now. If I could do it all again, I'd eliminate the Supreme Court ruling Citizens United, Bush told Bash. This is a ridiculous system we have now where you have campaigns that struggle to raise money directly and they can't be held accountable for the spending of the Super PAC that's their affiliate, unquote. And for all of the Trump tweets that we've mocked over the last few months, this one is pretty much dead on. Now that Bush has wasted $120 million of special interest money on his failed campaign, he says he would end Super PACs. Sad. Well, we don't know for sure that it's failed yet, but Jim, that's some pretty high-ranking hypocrisy coming from Jeb Bush there.
You know, Greg, if I spent like $100 million and had really nothing to show for it, I might want a law to stop me from ever doing that again, too. It was interesting. I understand Jeb said that, and then like from behind a curtain, Mike Murphy jumped onto stage and tackled him. Said, don't you dare say that. This has worked out very, very well for me. You know, current campaign finance has been very, very good to me, as they would say on Saturday Night Live. Two things about it. One is, I suppose you could say, look, McCain won the primary in 2008 touting campaign finance reform, or actually in 2000 he won it as well, touting that as his signature issue. It's a little bit of this Trump populist, the billionaires control these candidates, everybody's beholden to their donors. I don't think Jeb Bush is the right guy to make that message. This could be kind of a last-minute, you know, Hail Mary type pass to try to win some votes in New Hampshire, but it doesn't fit Jeb and what he's run so far, and it just looks kind of desperate. And for those of us who came into this primary feeling kind of, you know, relatively warm and fuzzy towards Jeb Bush, this is, you know, a very sour and off note and kind of a bitter end to a campaign that should have been better.
It's weird to basically have someone say, well, my Super PAC stunk, so I don't really like that First Amendment as much as I did a little while ago. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, I think it's fairly safe to say that you will not be named Hawkeye Son of the Year anytime soon, given all you've had to say about the process of the Iowa caucuses, not to mention the fact that they always get to go first over the years. But while New Hampshire has a much more straightforward system, which we highly appreciate, we'll probably actually know who wins both of them tonight, and we'll probably know and actually get vote totals, which is a step in the right direction. But there's a couple odd things about New Hampshire, too. First of all, a huge percentage of their voters are independents, and they get to participate in both the Democratic and Republican primaries. But the other thing is the apparent pride that exists in New Hampshire among 30% of the people or so every time this cycle happens, where they don't make up their mind until the last minute. And you see these people, they get the chance to go to dozens of town hall debates. They still don't make up their mind. There was even a lot of people on television this morning and on the radio suggesting while they're having breakfast at a diner this morning that they still didn't know and that they'd make up their mind in the booth. And maybe that's just their way of getting on TV. But Jim, this is a pretty important primary for determining who stays in this race and who doesn't. And so flipping a coin, pardon the pun, inside the voting booth is not necessarily the best way to choose a president.
This is a drum I've been beating for quite some time. For those of us in the 48 other states, we don't see why Iowa and New Hampshire, what's so much better about them? They always say there's high turnout rates. Well, yeah, because you're going first. And the candidates spend a lot of time there, and there's a lot of coverage of it. If tomorrow Virginia went first, or Colorado, or pick any state you like, you know, then turnout would be high there too. The reason turnout is low everywhere else is because by that point it's down to two candidates if you're lucky. And the other thing, which is just so insufferable about these states, and you kind of put your finger on it there, Greg, that, you know, well, it's very hard to decide. I've only met him like four or five times. John Kasich slept on my couch last night, and he was very gracious at the breakfast nook this morning. You know, these candidates, you know, these two states, they get enormous attention from these candidates, and you know, then they, you know, the idea that if you don't know who you like by now, look, maybe I could see you having trouble narrowing it down between one or two. But, you know, one, it is primary day, so you should make up your mind. Secondly, I'm pretty sure that a good chunk of these people who say they're undecided aren't really undecided. It's that once you've decided, everybody else stops courting you. So you kind of want to play coy. It's kind of like The Bachelor, you know. Well, you know that guy knows which one he likes and which ones are crazy. But as long as he keeps seeming undecisive, going, then all of the girls will be gushing over and throwing themselves at him and things like that. And kind of, I guess we're tired of watching Iowans and New Hampshireans be the Bachelor. We'd like to be courted in these other states. We'd like to count for something. Iowa wiped out Martin O'Malley. Not that anyone noticed. Huckabee, Santorum, and Rand Paul. Depending on how things shake out tonight, you know, maybe Jeb ends it. Probably not, but there's a possibility. If Kasich or Christie do badly, there's really not going to be much argument for them continuing to go on, considering the enormous resources they dumped into the state. You know, like, so these two states get to wipe out a good chunk of the field, and the rest of us are like, hey, wait a minute, when do we get a say in this? So put me on the bandwagon of folks who'd like to see a rotating process, rotating, you know, pick them out of a hat. However you want to do it, stop letting the corn farmers and the snowplow drivers of New Hampshire be the ones who pick who get to eliminate half the field before this. And usually South Carolina gets to gets to apply the death blow.
Yeah, exactly. And the rest of them after that, it's all drive-bys. You pretty much just put up an ad blitz and you get to a few town halls here and there and a few rallies here and there because you got so many different states up in a very short period of time. You have Super Tuesday that our state of Virginia is part of, and I don't even know how many states are on the ballot that day, but obviously they're going to be crisscrossing all over the place, and it's just a sprint once you're done with South Carolina. So
what it is that, you know, they always say, oh, these are small states, they're relatively cheap to campaign in, a lot of retail politicking, and all of that is technically true enough. On the other hand, I think it's time to put to bed this idea that, well, if I just go to all 99 counties in Iowa, if I just shake enough hands and enough diners in New Hampshire, I will catapult to the first tier, even though I have no money and nobody's heard of me and I can't afford to run ads and all that. No, it really hasn't worked like that in several decades now. And the closest you could say was Santorum last time, and he faded pretty quickly after that. For most of these guys, Iowa or New Hampshire are the best nights of their campaigns. Probably. And then everybody forgets about them. And I just I think it's fair to ask whether this really serves the party or of the American public the best it could.
We'll have to find an issue to barter with New Hampshire. Would you be willing to let Iowa stay first if we yanked ethanol subsidies and the renewable fuel standard in exchange for that?
I was going to say, how about syrup subsidies? Do we have any of those, the maple syrup subsidies?
Yeah, we got to find out what their bread and butter is up there. So I guess that's because you and I haven't been shaking enough hands in diners that we don't know. So
we're out of touch with the real people of New Hampshire, South Canada.
Jim.
Direct all hate mail to Jim Garrity.
Well, we're just hours away from finding out. I'm sure we'll have plenty of analysis tomorrow. Jim, talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg. Looking forward to it.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.